Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
They're less than $5.2 million away as it stands right now from the hard cap, so they couldn't even use the full mid-level exception.
Yeah, and I think hard capping out for D'Angelo Russell. Let me get your take on that, JD. I mean, you think, while I agree with getting that asset, but in a lot of ways it has hamstrung them as far as their maneuverability for this free agent period. I mean, do you think that was the most prudent course of action?
I do, just because the goal is be a championship contender 15 months from now.
Fair enough.
And not necessarily be a championship contender right, you know, now this upcoming season. I think you definitely want to be a playoff team this up and coming season, and we can get into that in a little bit more detail as far as where we left things at the end of the regular season and then into the playoffs and teams that are maybe on the rise and just, you know, how much of a lock it would be to consider the Warriors a playoff team. But no, I think the other aspect of this, which we haven't really gotten into much yet, is you get D'Angelo Russell, and it's twofold. You get him for this year, but you also get him because you can trade him.
Right.
And the one thing that I keep saying about trading D'Angelo Russell is if you're the Warriors, you don't have to take an all-star back. You don't have to get an all-star back for D'Angelo Russell. You could get two veteran players back that maybe other teams want out on for D'Angelo Russell, and you put those players with Stephen Curry and a healthy Klay Thompson and a Draymond Green, and all of a sudden you're right back there in that championship mix. You essentially could use D'Angelo Russell in a perfect world to get your next Iguodala and Livingston.
Right, parcel them out.
from various places.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of moving parts. But no, you're right. And to have that, like, that's what I was saying about Russell to begin with, is regardless of how he fits in this system, he's a young scoring guard and a guy with a willingness to put it up. And quite frankly, a guy whose career is trending in the right direction. I'd be curious to see in this, you know, I could even throw Willie Cauley-Stein in this as well, how these guys do in an organization with a whole hell of a lot more stability and around players like Curry and Draymond and, you know, the way the Warriors locker room is versus, say, like the Lakers or the Kings. I know the Kings, things started to turn for him last year and Cauley-Stein was there, but I don't think that the Kings viewed Willie Cauley-Stein as part of the solution up there in Sacramento. If they did, he'd still be there. So I think, you know, the chance for these guys to maybe flourish and take that next step, you know, growth professionally in a much more, professional environment, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and look, I'm not as bullish as many are as far as Sacramento and what they're building, and maybe not as much what they're building, but where they currently are. Like, I still think they're a little bit farther away than maybe many people do. But I don't want to make any mistake about that. Willie Cauley-Stein didn't fit for them. I mean, this is and that's to their credit. Like, I actually think they made the right move, just letting Willie Cauley-Stein go, not being the team that paid him, not seeing that he actually doesn't fit energy-wise, attitude-wise, work ethic-wise with the culture that you want to have moving forward. So I actually think Sacramento did a heck of a job in getting, you know, two players that in Dwayne Dedman and even Rashawn Holmes that are, you know, stopgap kind of a players, but they're players that know who they are as players. I mean, if there's a knock on Willie Cauley-Stein, it's the fact that he thinks he's pretty darn good and that he's already arrived. And I think having that guy be, you know, your longest tenured player with the young core that Sacramento has, that was a breath of fresh air for them last year of winning 39 games. It actually became a really easy decision, I think, for them to move on from Willie Cauley-Stein, and it winds up giving them flexibility for years to come. Now, does he come to the Warriors humbled? I think you hope, if you're a Warriors fan, that he comes in humbled and ready to work and ready to earn. But he's also a guy that, you know, had his best season last year, and I think he probably thinks he already should have had that, and if he didn't get it after last year, when's he ever going to get it? And I think you have to wonder at that point, does he come here and kind of coast? So I don't think it's a lock, although it is set up for the Warriors to get a good year out of Cauley Stein.
Yeah, and the talent is there, but I would agree with your take wholeheartedly that he plays like a dude that's already arrived. And
He just doesn't play hard consistently. Well, and he doesn't do the little things consistently. If he rim runs and tries to defend and runs the floor hard, he's a good player. Right. But the reality is he just doesn't do any. I can't remember if I said this to you, but I've said it a couple of times during the week. He is the guy that will go toe-to-toe with Joel Embiid one night and then get his ass kicked by Damian Jones the next
yep,
night.
Yep,
like
he did.
That,
yep.
That is exactly what he's been throughout the course of his career. He's played well against the Warriors in a lot of games the last couple of years. The one game he didn't was a game where the Warriors were shorthanded and Damian Jones was in the – it was Damian Jones, one of the better games he had last season in November, right around Thanksgiving, where, he'll play better when the Warriors have all four of their guys going and, it's a night for maybe the Kings to try and pull off an upset of the Warriors, as they nearly did a couple of times.
Yeah, well, that's why he only got a little more than the veteran minimum on a one-year deal with the Dubs. So I guess if he thought his market was going to be robust, he was sadly mistaken. I know we got to run, JD, but I got to ask you about Summer League and Zion and the vibe out there in Vegas. I know Kawhi Leonard craziness has kind of ruled the day for us, but I watched that game last night. I know you were out there, and let Zion mania begin.
Yeah, no question. We'll get into that coming up, and we'll get into how some of the Warriors players have looked coming up as well. Connor Letourneau, the Chronicle, is going to join us at 10:30. But more of your phone calls. Welcome at 888-957-9570. Warriors this week. JD in Vegas, Covey in San Francisco. We're rolling on here on a Saturday at 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Warriors This Week on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson, literally in a hallway in Las Vegas, which is, you get in where you fit in, brother.
We've got to put you out in the hall, JD.
In Toronto, there were some connection issues that never made the air. Nobody cares. But it led me from the hotel room down to the lobby. So I was just kind of chilling in the lobby at this big table doing a radio show. And I thought, well, this is going to be really awkward and uncomfortable. But it wasn't. And actually, yeah, I'm like right in the business center area of the hotel, which of course is a ghost town on a Saturday morning at 10:17. So I pretty much got the run of the place, but it was the one spot of this hotel that I could get the equipment set up and actually establish the connection required to broadcast. So we'll pull back the curtain just a little bit here for you. But it equates to I'm basically at like this big dresser kind of, armoire, standing table, and I got the laptop and the notepad and the microphone and everything hooked up. The iPad's here. I got a bunch of notes all spread out everywhere. But to this point, nobody's bothered me because there's all these different conference rooms in this business center, but it's freaking Saturday morning, so
nobody's
even looking around to like, what the heck is this guy doing? Talking to himself in the middle of a hallway with a microphone.
Who's going to mess with John Dickinson anyway, And we appreciate you, JD, being out there in Vegas. I mean, we got to stay up to the most current news with Warriors Summer League, right? I mean, Smiley Geach, I mean, how's he looking, man? He'll throw it up, though, by the way. I think I'm feeling, out of all the draft picks, I think Pascal's the most NBA ready. Jordan Poole, head scratcher for me. Smiley Geach, can't wait to see him run. Looks like he's going to be a fun player to watch.
Yeah, Pascal is probably my favorite early on just because his game does fit seemingly immediately, his athleticism, his body type. I mean, he has a knack for just finding spots on the floor to take shots where you're thinking, okay, this works. Like, you could do this in an NBA game. You can knock down the three, hit a corner three, hit a three from the top of the key. I mean, his pick and pop game's pretty good. He's decent in, you know, inside. So I like his game. Smilagic is fearless. Smilagic basically tries to drive and dunk on anybody he possibly can every time he gets the ball on the perimeter. I mean, it's remarkable. I mean, it just the fearlessness that he plays with for an 18-year-old, I think, has been impressive. And Jordan Poole, we're going to talk with Connor Letourneau in about 10 minutes of the Chronicle. And Connor, he talked to and wrote about Jordan Poole last night coming off of that game. He's able to get his shot off, but not a lot of them are falling to this point for Jordan Poole. So, yeah, he is clearly behind the other two in the early going. But I just can't stress enough. We can't make too much of how these guys are playing and looking and you know, in the first, you know, 3-4 professional games that they play, you know, in the middle of, you know, or at the beginning of July, not even the middle of July yet.
Come on, JD, we need to rush to judgment, man. We need hot takes, all right? I need to know. Smilagic is going to the All-Star game, and Passel's going to the Hall of Fame someday.
Jordan Poole's a bust already.
Oh, without question, yeah.
I mean,
that's already happened.
I mean, and I know you're not saying that, but
no,
let's,
of course not.
You know, I think, I mean, you look at the numbers last night, and actually, I thought Jordan Poole had his best first half of a game last night, but I'm looking at the overall numbers last night. Here, I'm bringing that up here. I got it. He winds up
shot a lot.
3 for 14 from three. He wound up 6 for 9. At one point, he was 4 for 8. So he wound up 2 for his last 11 overall. He did score 15 points, but he scored 15 points on 19 shots, and he was 3 for 14 from 3-point range. So clearly they've given him a green light in the early going. And he can get his shot off, which I think is important, but he's got to start seeing a few of them, I think, go down at a higher rate.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, and summer league, it's a work in progress. Just throw it up right now, get comfortable. The thing that you know, when I look at the Warriors box score, there's four names that I want to see as far as, you know, minutes, field goals attempted, etc. It's the three draft picks, and it's Jacob Evans, and that's essentially what we've seen so far. So those are the guys that I want getting the most meaningful run right now. Those are the guys that the, you know, Warriors fans are going to be looking for to have an impact on this roster, if any, not just this season, but in the seasons to come. So those are the guys that I want to see getting the most work.
Let's get to Aaron in San Francisco. Aaron, you're on 95.7 The Game.
You guys are speaking my language, man. The Warriors' future is all about player development. Absolutely crucial to growth. I heard somebody call in and say something about Draymond trade. You can't even consider it unless you're going to get somebody more versatile, stronger than him. He's a core foundation of this team. Thompson will be back next year. You know, KD's gone, all that. But we got to worry about what's going on in L.A. and on both teams and get ready for that, because it's now run and gun. So we got to develop two-way players, role players, guys that can do it, and we need a strong free agent. And the point is, there's nobody out there right now. We need a role player, strong free agent, just weather the storm next year. But it's all about player development, man, because we got to have some space and cap. It's going to come up. We want to go anywhere, player development.
I think there's
thanks for the call.
Yeah, that's a good take. I mean, I think when, you know, it's easy to say now, JD, oh, you know, where's my young players? You know, what's going on with this roster? Look, the team just went to 5 straight finals. Like, there needs to be a moment for this organization to catch its collective breath. And if it needs to change direction a little bit, it needs to have a little bit of time to pivot. This stuff doesn't happen overnight. Like, and I'll give them credit for the D'Angelo Russell move. That was a big time move that I wasn't expecting, that keeps that, it's kind of sticks a crowbar in that championship window and trying to keep it wedged open and getting something in return instead of losing KD for nothing. But they need to allow a little bit of room here to grow these players. You can't blame them for not wanting to give the Jordan Bells of the world and, you know, like I mentioned, you know, Patrick McCaw and any young player really on this team the last handful of years outside of Kevon Looney, you know, any chance to have a meaningful role, because they didn't earn it. And when the expectation is, hey, look, we're basically, our season starts at like the Western Conference Finals, and the goal is to get back to the NBA Finals and win another title. as a fan, like, that's all you could ever hope for, that that's what your organization's number one focus is, and it's a realistic goal to be achieved on a yearly basis. But now, like you said, I love your take on it's the 16-month plan, and with that in mind, you're going to look at 2020 as a year to develop some of these young players, maybe alter the course of the franchise just a bit here. You're not just all in on, you know, KD and Clay and Draymond and Steph and Iguodala. I mean, half of those guys, if you throw Livingston in there, half of the core is going to be gone anyway. So, yeah, it is time to change directions a bit. But they need the opportunity to breathe a little bit to do that. Unfortunately, that's coinciding with the rest of the NBA and this free agent arms race. And quite frankly, a couple of teams in California have been power loading for next season. And let's face it, that's what these GMs and these teams around basketball have all been waiting for, the Warriors to come back to earth a little bit. And now that moment's finally here. So I think we all knew this day would come eventually. It's unfortunate that it's coincided with Clay's injury and losing Kevin Durant.
And look, I just can't say it enough, the fact that the Warriors with D'Angelo Russell have given themselves options. They can see how D'Angelo Russell fits with Curry. If it works well enough to where they're in contention, they can see how he works as a third guard, a combo guard, a guy that could play, you know, a backup role to Curry and Klay Thompson. And then if that doesn't work, or you feel that there's value elsewhere in allowing D'Angelo Russell to go to his own team where he can be a franchise player, then you do that, and you're in a position where you don't have to take star players back. The Warriors, if they get two solid role players for D'Angelo Russell and they have a healthy Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green going into the 2020 season, and a couple of role players to boot, they're going to be in a great spot. I want to let everybody know the NBA has released a statement regarding the earthquake and the structural integrity of the Thomas and Mack Center and the Cox Pavilion here in Las Vegas. The league announcing that they did do a thorough survey by two structural engineers. So Thomas and Mack Center, Cox Pavilion have both been deemed safe to open. So the Summer League will continue as scheduled today, beginning at noon. And the Warriors are one of the last games on the docket. They actually play at 9 o'clock tonight in Thomas and Mack against the Toronto Raptors. So everything going on, business as usual. There was a game canceled late at the end of the night. Obviously that Knicks-Pelicans game was ongoing and stopped a little bit short after Zion made his debut because of the earthquake in Southern California that was so significant it was felt and really rattled people inside Thomas and Mack last night. Yours, myself included.
Yeah, no, we saw the report, and you know, a lot of people were tweeting out about it. I saw a lot of the NBA players that were out there tweeting about it, and just a scary situation. And here in the Bay Area, we're no strangers to earthquakes. The Loma Prieta earthquake, that's a day in my childhood that I'll never forget. So it's not something that we take lightly. We're glad that, you know, structurally the arenas in Vegas are safe, but, you know, more it's about anybody that has been truly affected by this earthquake. Of course, thoughts and prayers go out to them. It's just, it's reality living out here in Cali, JD. This stuff happens, but it sucks when it does, man.
All right, let's get back to some phone calls. We still have Brian in Palo Alto on
Let's go to Brian in Palo Alto. I'm with it.
All right, Brian, you're on 95.7 The Game with JD and Covey.
Hey, guys, I want to run some numbers by you, and I want you to tell me if that sounds like a max player. 7.8 points a game, 28% from three, 43% from two, has the highest turnover percentage of any player in the NBA, and is a good but clearly declining player defensively. Does that sound like a max player to you?
No.
Okay, that's Draymond.
Yeah, I know. I knew where you're going with that.
I don't know. I don't know why we can't have just a rational, like, numbers, reasoned debate about Draymond Green, right? Everyone has this, like, knee-jerk reaction of he's the heart and soul and all this other stuff. And the data clearly says this is a declining player for three consecutive seasons. There's some possibility that all of a sudden that trend stops. But there's not a lot of historical data to say a guy in a three-year spiral, and which is what he's been on, is going to turn that around all of a sudden. And, like, that he may turn it on for, like, six to eight games a year in the playoffs. I don't know that that has the same value it once did. You need, like he said, when they were in championship mode, you need 16-game players, not 82-game players. Well, now you need 82-game players because you're going to be fighting to make the playoffs and you're fighting for position. So I think if they give him a max or even a huge extension, that's it. That's game, set, match. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Wow. There's a lot to unpack there, J.D.
Appreciate the call. Yeah, a lot to chew on there. And let's go ahead and bring in our first guest on the program, and we can start the conversation with him. Covers the Warriors for the San Francisco Chronicle. He is here in Las Vegas, and it's a pleasure to be joined by Connor Letourneau. Connor, appreciate the time, my man. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
You're on with John Dickinson and Ryan Covey here on 95.7 The Game. Let's start with Draymond Green, because we just had a caller, and we were throwing it around a little bit. You know, what do the Warriors ultimately do with Draymond Green? Do you believe he's on the decline? If so, to what level? And how do you think the Warriors view Draymond Green, not just for next year, but for the next 4 or potentially 5 years?
It's hard to say someone's off on a decline when they're fresh off one of the greatest postseason performances I think we've ever witnessed. I mean, he was absolutely sensational in that postseason. But I will say that given how Draymond plays, given all the nagging injuries he's had to deal with the past couple years, I think there is a real concern that his production is going to seriously dip in coming years, and that he could be one of those players that once he hits his early 30s, his production just completely plummets. And, you know, you look at guys who have similar playing styles as him, guys who are undersized power forwards or centers, they tend to have that type of rapid decline. Guys like Dennis Rodman comes to mind, you know. So that's going to be a really interesting question in coming months when they're sitting down and doing negotiations with Draymond about a potential contract extension, because I don't believe the Warriors are sold that he is deserving of a 5-year max, because that's looking at, you know, close to 40 or so million, 40 something million dollars to Draymond at 35. Right. And when you have no idea what Draymond at 35 is going to be. So, and given all the other questions facing this roster, you're not sure that you want to make that type of long-term commitment to someone like that. So that's going to be something really interesting to monitor. And you look at their roster, he's really their only other potential trade chip at this point. I mean, you're not obviously getting rid of Clay. You're not getting rid of Steph. And Draymond's a big contract. It's like going to be expiring. So it's very possible, I think, that they could end up shopping him at some point this season if they decide that they need to go in a different direction.
Would you expect them to offer him that 4-year, right around $100 million extension at any point this upcoming summer or season?
You know, what I've heard talking to people in the organization is that they've been leaning toward that, but they haven't come up with a firm decision on it. And I think it's partly because of everything going on in this free agency where, you know, so much has changed. And I think their entire outlook for not just next season, but really the foreseeable future has changed. So I don't think they've come to a firm decision on that yet.
Let me ask you this then. If they were going to shop him around, I mean, you know, based on the fact that he's an expiring contract and it sounds like he's a guy that is going to expect to get paid this offseason, I mean, what could the Warriors hope to get in return?
That's the thing. I really don't think that his market value is what a lot of people would assume it would be for a 3-time All-Star, a guy who former Defensive Player of the Year. You know, I really don't think it's what people would expect, largely because he's actually kind of a niche guy in some ways. I mean, what he needs, a team that's really going to want to pay big for someone like Draymond has to be in a very specific situation. They have to be in win now mode. They have to be a team that really needs leadership, that needs defense. But I've actually gone and tried to look at, you know, different teams that could make sense. And in different trade possibilities, and there's nothing obvious that comes to mind.
Connor Letourneau, our guest here on 95.7 The Game. It's Warriors This Week, JD and Covey, and Connor appears via the Dialpad guest line. Connect your team with a business communication platform that powers voice, video messages, and meetings across your existing devices. I know you wrote about Jordan Poole and had a chance to talk to Jordan Poole last night after the Warriors game against the Hornets. He struggled this week. Volume of shots is there, but the shots haven't been falling for him. How's he doing with that? Is it just a matter of letting a rip for him right now? Are the Warriors comfortable with that? Gauge where Jordan Poole's at here, his first professional week.
Yeah, I mean, well, first thing, Summer League is Summer League. It's an adjustment period for any rookie. There's going to be some growing pains. I don't think anyone should sound an alarm based off someone's production their first three games through their first Summer League. So I don't want to make too big of a deal of it. But the reality of the situation is that he has not shot the ball well at all. I believe he's 16% from three through his first three games in Summer League. He missed one game. He sat out one game in Sacramento. And this is a guy who was drafted basically solely for his shot-making ability. He's not a great defender. He's not a great passer. He was drafted because they wanted a floor spacer, especially with Klay Thompson going to miss time, expected to miss time, significant time next season. And if he can't hit shots at a high level, there's no point in really playing him at all. And you look at their roster next season, they really need a guy like Jordan Poole to at least eat up some minutes, you know, take some burden off of D'Angelo Russell and Steph Curry and Klay when he gets back. So it'll be interesting to see. I didn't love that pick when they took him at 28. My thought was all he can do is shoot, and he's not really an elite shooter. He's a good shooter, but he's not an elite shooter. I like his quick release, but he really needs to work on his shot selection. JD, you were there last night. We both saw some pretty ridiculous shots that he was attempting that really had no chance of going in, and he needs to dial that back a bit.
And let me ask you – oh, go ahead, JD. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and I mean, you know, a couple of us had asked Aaron Miles, who's coaching the team and coaches at G League Santa Cruz, you know, just about finding that balance. And I thought, you know, Miles put it pretty bluntly. I mean, he said, you know, there were a couple of guys that were just taking shots that didn't need to be taken. And I think, you know, I found it interesting. I mean, he gave a real answer to a question, because I wasn't really expecting that. I thought it was going to kind of be, no, you know, green light for the kid, you know, get comfortable. I think there was I think even Aaron Miles was a little bit taken aback at some of those shots.
Yeah, one thing I appreciate about Aaron, who we're obviously just kind of really getting to know in his first experience as Summer League coach, is he's very blunt about how he feels about players and their development. And, you know, one thing he's also been very blunt about is Jacob Evans' transition to point guard, which is a big storyline at Summer League. It doesn't sound to me like Aaron is super high on Jacob as a point guard. And Aaron is a guy who was a phenomenal pass-first point guard at Kansas, was the all-time assist leader in the Big 12. So he knows what a good point guard looks like. So he can see the floor and make the right reads. And I just talking to him, reading between the lines, he's always very tepid at best about that possibility. But, you know, once again, you look at their roster next season and there's another glaring hole there. They don't have a backup point guard right now. You got to think they're probably going to add someone on a minimum, but you're probably going to need Jacob to play at least a little bit of point because they don't have as many ball handlers now. And that's another thing that they lost with Andre was a really good ball handler who could initiate the offense. So that'll be interesting to see.
Let me ask you this. When we're looking at the roster right now, Connor, I'm looking at a gigantic hole at the small forward position. I know that they only have limited funds remaining, shall we say, and the market is pretty thin. Any names out there potentially intriguing to you as a guy that they might be looking to add?
There's not, honestly, a lot of impressive small forwards. I actually don't necessarily expect them to add another small forward. They only have a couple roster spots left. I think they actually have more glaring needs than small forward even. They need to shore up that backup backcourt in both shooting guard and point guard, because I don't know if you can really trust Jacob Evans and Jordan Poole to play significant minutes. And then center too. I mean, there's one option. Well, they actually have a couple options in terms of maybe trying to get someone really of value, and they want to trade. They're probably going to trade, or at least shop him, Sean Livingston, and they need to do that in the next couple of days before his contract for next season becomes fully guaranteed on July 10th. And then I also think there's a chance they trade Damian Jones, who's making about $3 million, I think, next year, and he's still showing some promise, but he's not there yet. I don't really know what the market value is for him, but if you can get anything, that might help. But yeah, I mean, Glenn Robinson III or Alphonso McKinney very well could be their starting small forward, at least until Clay gets back. I think if they keep D'Angelo Russell, Clay's going to be their starting small forward.
And Connor, final question for you, and it's along the lines of what we're talking about here. And I mentioned Damian Jones earlier as well as a guy that I could see the Warriors trying to deal. The acquisition of Colley Stein, makes him a little bit redundant, I think, on the roster. But it's also a means to, even if you just relieve yourself from his salary, that allows you to maybe add another minimum player at another position that could possibly help you, because to me, they're going to have to find another small forward and then maybe have to trust Jacob Evans to have to play a little bit. But I wanted to ask you about that. And then also, what do you think ultimately happens with Sean Livingston in the next couple of days?
Yeah. Damian Jones, he didn't do himself any favors by going out in Sacramento and not looking good. I mean, this is a guy who's entering his fourth season in the league, and he's still at Summer League and not even playing well, not dominating. I mean, he had, I believe, 7 fouls in his first game. And I don't want to be too harsh. You know, he's coming back from that pec injury. He's kind of getting his feet under him. You give him some credit for even volunteering to be out there. He actually asked the coaches if he could go to Sacramento just to get some extra runs to try to get in a rhythm. So you respect that, but he's not where the Warriors thought he'd be at this point. And I agree with you, just from a financial standpoint, it makes sense to move on from him. His best case scenario would be to be a worse version of a Willie Cauley-Stein, I think. I expect them to at least look into that possibility. And then Sean Livingston will not obviously be back for the Warriors next season. I believe the Warriors are looking into trying to trade him right now. If they can't get someone to take on that contract, they will probably have to waive him before July 10th, because his only guaranteed contract of $7.7 million becomes guaranteed on July 10th. Otherwise, only $2 million of that will be guaranteed. So they will try to waive him if they can't trade him. And if he's waived, I would think he'd probably retire.
Connor, great stuff. Really appreciate it, my man, and I'll see you a little bit later on.
Thanks, Connor.
All right. Thanks, JD. Appreciate it, guys.
All right.
There he is. Connor Letourneau.
And Covey.
Oh, it's all good. No, because you're there, and you were the last one to speak to him. No, me and Connor go way back, baby. We're all good.
888-957-9570. Let's reopen the phone lines. Connor Letourneau with a couple of points, including, Glenn Robinson III.
And
Alphonso McKinney.
That's what I was thinking.
I mean, that might be the most startling statement as to where the Golden State Warriors are right this second with the injuries and adding D'Angelo Russell. We'll get back to more phone calls. A lot to get to here. It's JD in Vegas, Covey in San Francisco, Warriors this week at 95.7 The Game.
Warriors this week continues on 95.7 The Game.
John Dickinson in Las Vegas, Ryan Covey in our San Francisco studios, and you on the phone lines, 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Just about halfway through here on a Saturday morning. Our thanks to Connor Letourneau of the San Francisco Chronicle. Connor here in Vegas covering the Summer League for a few days. And, Jordan Poole is a little bit behind Eric Paschal and maybe even Alan Smilagic, who Smilagic has had a flash play or two in each game. Been, I think, overall solid. But every game there's been one or two plays where you go, wow. And then Paschal just kind of fits in, knocks down open shots, gets to the right spots, does a lot of the little things that you would expect from a four-year player that played at a school like Villanova.
Yeah. No, I won a title there, too. I mean, Paschal, he's NBA ready, man. I think for where they got him in the draft, and, these things, only time will tell. I understand that. But just on the surface, that should be the guy that Warriors fans have penciled in to make a meaningful contribution in this upcoming season. I like him. He's got a little dog in him. He's not afraid to pull it. There's some intangibles to his game that speak to being ready. His body type. I look at Jordan Poole, and this is a common theme with guys that come out only after a couple of seasons. He's young, like physically, he's not imposing, and he doesn't look totally NBA ready to me. And if you're going to be undersized like that, you got to be like Trae Young with some serious handle, in order to stand up to the rigors of the NBA. I don't want to shovel a bunch of dirt on Jordan Poole. We need to give him time to develop and work on his game. Let's face it, it's not Jordan Poole's quote-unquote fault that he was selected in the first round by the Dubs. I know that we love to hold players to a high standard as to where they get drafted, etc., but Poole just needs a little time to grow. While I agree with Connor that they do need some help in that backcourt, like when you have D'Angelo Russell and Steph Curry, like two guys on max contracts, there's only so much to go around. And, that reality of Alphonso McKinney and Glenn Robinson III as the pecking order at small forward, like I just pictured that at Chase Center next year, like Alphonso McKinney being in the starting lineup opening night at Chase. And that's a reality check if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, and it'd be one thing if you were starting Alphonso McKinney and you had Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and say a DeMarcus Cousins, that's coming back and healthier. And,
sure.
And everybody's ready to roll. And it's like, well, you lost Kevin Durant, but you've still got these four all-star players. And you know what? McKinney's going to have to start at the three. At that point, it becomes a little bit more palatable. I know the Warriors are strapped right now in terms of being up against the cap to a point where they can't even use their full mid-level exception. But I think this team is going to have to look at making a couple of moves to alleviate some smaller salaries, even if it means trading a guy like Damian Jones, even if it means trading a guy like Jacob Evans, as much as I do think they are still high on him as a jack-of-all-trades type of a player that can play multiple positions. They are trying to make him into a point guard. I think it's going a little bit better than maybe Connor had put it in referencing Aaron Miles, who's coaching this team in the Summer League. I think Miles has been highly critical of his defense. But he had a 7-turnover game as well, one of the games in Sacramento. But I actually think he looks pretty comfortable learning the position or relearning the position. He played some point guard coming up in the high school ranks and did it a little bit in college. But to me, it's about figuring a way strategically in manipulating salaries to try and be able to use that mid-level exception on somebody that can really help you. And I think that position, because look, even if Klay Thompson comes back and when he comes back, you're still going to need a 3-4 type, a guy that can be almost a starting three. You're going to need somebody to fill some of the Iguodala minutes, let alone the Kevin Durant minutes. So
is Paschal a true power forward only? Like, how do you...
I think he's a stretch four, or even a small ball five.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I really do. I think he's got the body type. We'll have to see him in the NBA level, but I think he's got the body type maybe to defend some fives as well, because he does seem strong, even though he's not, you know, I wouldn't, he doesn't have center height necessarily, but I do think he has center strength.
Sure.
So especially against, you know, some of the smaller centers, but I think he's a stretch four, small ball type of a five. We're continuing to react as well to the big news late last night, and that's Kawhi Leonard agreeing to a deal with the Los Angeles Clippers. And not only does Kawhi Leonard go to the Clippers on a four-year, $142 million max contract, but the Oklahoma City Thunder are also trading Paul George to the Clippers for a record number of draft picks, what amounts to five picks, along with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Danilo Gallinari, four unprotected first-round picks. There's pick swaps involved. This broke late last night at the 11 o'clock hour, Covey. I know you were you said you were already in bed getting ready for this show.
Yeah, of course.
But wow, I mean, Kawhi Leonard, I mean, that puts the Clippers, it vaults them along with Paul George right to the top of the Western Conference. If not right at the top, they're certainly in the conversation.
Yeah, and they've got a couple of guys they can bring off that bench, too, with Harkless and Rodney Magruder. And I think Landry Shamet will start. You hit on that earlier. But, yeah, that five to close out games with Patrick Beverley, who Warriors fans definitely got up close and personal with in the first round of the playoffs this year. You got Kawhi, Paul George, Montrezl Harrell, and then the perennial six-man, a dude that they're probably going to rename the award after someday, Lou Williams. And this Clippers team, it's going to be fun. And it's just, how about Jerry West and his ability to recruit players? I mean, he does it again, man. He did it with Shaq. He did it with KD. Now he's done it with Kawhi. Jerry West is the GOAT of the front office. I mean, this dude, what a stroke of genius. And that's pretty telling to me that Jerry West has done it again. And how about Kawhi kind of playing with the Lakers? And I get it. It's a recruitment process. And, you know, everybody's got to throw their best pitch out there. And then ultimately the player has to decide the best situation for him. But, you know, what I was reading was that he told the Lakers to hold off on the Anthony Davis trade till maybe Sunday, until he figured out what he wanted to do to give them that flexibility. But in reality, it seemed like he was just waiting to see if the Clippers were going to be able to consummate a trade for Paul George. And if so, see you later.
Yeah, everybody was wondering what the holdup was. And now in the reporting from Chris Haynes and Adrian Wojnarowski, Ramona Shelburne, all pointing toward the fact that really the holdup was, could the Clippers acquire Paul George? And now it seems almost as if it was the Clippers or go back to the Raptors at this point for Kawhi Leonard, with Kawhi not necessarily wanting to join Anthony Davis and LeBron James and informing a super team on the other side of Staples Center.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, from how this affects the Golden State Warriors, I think the Warriors fans should feel pretty good about this. The best-case scenario is Kawhi stays in the East. I understand that. But instead of making the Lakers this juggernaut with Kawhi, Anthony Davis, and LeBron, which I think would have put the Warriors at a real disadvantage to get back to being championship relevant. I think at that point, anything short of a coup to acquire Giannis Antetokounmpo in a couple of years, I think that would be the only way back for them. But now this kind of equally disperses this a little bit. And if you look at the Lakers, they went from thinking, man, we might land Kawhi Leonard. We've got three of the top talents in the NBA. Look at all this star power. Now it's, we've got a 35-year-old superstar in LeBron James who's, you know, coming off a hamstring. We've got a guy in Anthony Davis whose talent could never be questioned, but maybe some professional growth, the way that things ended in New Orleans, I don't think was the best look for him, and he's had some durability issues. And then you round it out with, you know, Danny Green, who we know is a catch-and-shoot three-point guy. He's obviously played at the highest of levels, but I think Danny Green's best basketball has already been played. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, a willing shooter, shall we say. And then JaVale McGee and Quinn Cook, guys that Warriors fans both know very well. They do a couple of things okay, but outside of that, their game's got some limitations as well. So, I mean, all of a sudden, this Lakers roster is looking kind of to me. I'm thinking, I know they got JaVale, but I'm thinking like maybe Boogie ends up there, JD.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Although, again, it looks like they are, it looks like they're using part of their mid-level exception to give to JaVale McGee, which, I mean, good for him to get that. And you got to wonder, boy, if you're DeMarcus Cousins,
right?
And you're seeing, I mean, Willie Cauley-Stein took the minimum. JaVale McGee, it looks like, is getting close to twice the minimum at this point, and maybe a full room mid-level exception from the Lakers, a team with cap space, their mid-level exception, which is a little bit less than the taxpayer mid-level exception. I mean, if you're DeMarcus Cousins, you're thinking, I'm better than all these guys,
right,
and I'm still sitting out trying to find a team. I mean, it's got to be incredibly frustrating for DeMarcus Cousins right now.
Yeah, it's like a game of musical chairs. My man standing there without a chair, he's like, you think about it, it wasn't that long ago, JD, with Anthony Davis. I mean, the Twin Towers, they were rolling, and that's why I thought the Lakers might be a viable spot, because him and Davis have that continuity together, and you know that they could make it work in the front court. And that Achilles injury obviously has hampered his career arc. And, you know, I thought that he showed a lot coming back from the quad injury the way he did. I mean, it was, you know, he tore the quad, and it's like, oh man, here another injury blow for DeMarcus Cousins. And granted, he didn't look great when he came back in the finals, but he had a couple of big games. And I mean, you know, the two games that the Warriors won in particular, DeMarcus was key in those. And yeah, he's got his limitations at this point. He needs to drop some weight without question, and you know, maybe a full off season of conditioning can help him do that. I don't think that it's outside the realm of possibilities that DeMarcus could one day get paid a reasonable chunk of change again in the NBA, but it speaks to a couple of things, JD. I think it speaks to, obviously, his injury history at this point. His history, you know, in locker rooms and just kind of the way DeMarcus Cousins is perceived around the league. I know that he wasn't a malcontent by any means with Golden State, but I just kind of got the feeling that, you know, there was a feeling of, you know, based on all the factors at play, we're good on that. And so, you know, it's far, and then how much can he really bring to the table at this point, you know, from a defensive skill set? I mean, there's just a lot that comes along with DeMarcus Cousins. And it's unfortunate in respect, because you know that the guy's got true talent and ability, and you hate to see injuries cut a guy's, you know, career and even market value short like that. But seems like that's kind of where we're at with DeMarcus Cousins. He's still young enough where I don't think, you know, the ship has totally sailed as far as his, you know, earning power going forward. But it also speaks to the plight of the big man in the modern day NBA on some level.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. We are halfway through on a Saturday. It's John Dickinson and Ryan Covey, Warriors this week. Covey in for Steiny, reacting to the Kawhi Leonard news as he goes to the Clippers, and he's bringing Paul George with him. Paul George going from Oklahoma City to the Clippers via trade. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, also Danilo Gallinari, and four unprotected first-round picks, along with pick swaps and another pick going to Oklahoma City in this deal. I think underrated in all of this is what Oklahoma City was able to acquire for a guy that they probably weren't winning a championship with to begin with. 888-957-9570. Let's throw this question out there. Given what we know about Kawhi and Paul George now, and what the Lakers have done with Anthony Davis, and where the Warriors are at losing Kevin Durant to Brooklyn, where are the Warriors in the Western Conference right now? Where are the Warriors in the grand scheme of the Western Conference? Just where do you rank them right now? Who's ahead of them? Who's maybe on their level? And who maybe is still trying to knock on the door? Are the Warriors a playoff team? I mean, I'll just put it that bluntly. Are the Warriors right now a playoff team as things stand for 2019-2020?
Boy, and that's a big question, because you would...
They're not a lock, are they?
No,
they're not a lock.
They're not. They're just not. And if Klay comes back and they're within striking distance, I think you do got to go for it. Everything about this Warriors franchise says to me that they will go for it. And you have to believe, if you got Klay back and you found your way into the tournament with those guys, with, you know, Clay, Steph, Draymond, and then, of course, D'Angelo Russell, that they would have a puncher's chance against anybody. And, you know, let's face it, if the Warriors were a, you know, 7 seed, 6 seed, something like that, none of those top seeds would want to see the Dubs in the first round. But when you just look at how stacked the Western Conference is, I mean, think about it. The Utah Jazz, with the moves they've made, adding Conley, they've clearly gotten better, and then Bogdanovich as well. The Portland Trailblazers, hell, they were in the West Finals last year. I'm not crazy about the Whiteside move. We'll see what happens with Nurkic. The Nuggets, they're going to get Porter Jr. back. I know he got hurt again, but sounds like he's going to at least be ready for training camp. And, you know, the Rockets, they're still in the conversation. I think the Thunder definitely get knocked down a few pegs, but, you know, you definitely don't want to sleep on the Spurs. You got the these are teams, by the way, JD, right now, that were outside of the playoff bubble last year. The LA Lakers, okay, I think they're going to be obviously much better this year. The New Orleans Pelicans, I think I could see a case, and I know that they could also be basically what they were last year, a 33-49 team, but I like that roster. I do. And with Holiday and Zion, and they got J.J. Redick, and they still got Jrue Holiday, I think the Pelicans are going to be tough. Mavericks are going to be better. Suns won't be a playoff team, but they're going to be better. The bottom line is the West is stacked. And so with that in mind, this is not going to be some foregone conclusion that the Warriors will be a playoff team. No question.
Yeah, I look at it right now, and I think Denver's a playoff team. I think Portland's a playoff team. I think the Rockets are a playoff team. Utah might be the best, second best, third best in the Western Conference. I mean, I love what Utah's done in getting Mike Conley and also Bojan Bogdanovic away from Indiana. So I think Utah's actually moved up from where they were at the end of the year. The Spurs,
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.